This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Wisconsin is on its way to updating the state constitution's bail policies after a man out on bail rammed his car into the Waukesha Christmas parade, killing six people. This is at a time when other states are completely eliminating cash bail policies, saying they are discriminatory. So what should Wisconsin's bail policy be? Here to discuss is Mr. Craig Johnson, who is a career criminal defense attorney and president of the Wisconsin Justice Initiative, and Representative Craig Allen, Republican. Scott Allen. Here we go. Scott and Craig, a Republican from Waukesha. Thank you both for being with us today. Representative Allen, starting with you, you were walking in that parade back last November when this tragedy happened. How is the community doing 9 months later?
I think pretty good. It's a resilient community. There will always be a bit of sadness when we remember the event itself. But there's hope in the sense of how the community has come together. If you drive through most Waukesha neighborhoods today, you'll still see the blue lights on the front porch of many, many houses at night. That was one of the things that the community did to indicate that they are Waukesha strong. Just this week, nominations have been submitted for a permanent memorial to those who lost their lives in the tragedy. It'll be at a nearby park, Greedy Park, close to downtown. So there were six submissions, and there's a committee involved with reviewing those submissions. And I think it's appropriate that there be a memorial for those who lost their lives. But there were also a lot of people who were traumatized by the event, not just those who were injured, but those who witnessed what happened and provided triage and help to those who needed help before the the professionals could arrive on scene. And I think for many, there will be years of pain and grief associated with that. I've talked to some parents who, whose young children have said they never want to go to a parade again.
So more healing definitely needed.
It's going to take time.
Mr. Johnson, the defendant in this case had been out on $1,000 cash bail, even though he had recently hit his ex-girlfriend with that same car. He had prior criminal convictions and was wanted in another state. Is this particular case evidence that there needs to be reform in Wisconsin bail policies?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us this morning. Certainly my heart and my condolences go to the Waukesha community. It was a terrible tragedy that I think really wrenched the hearts of everybody in Wisconsin. Let me be clear. Darryl Brooks should never have been out on the cash bail amount that he was able to post that allowed him to be out in the community. He represented a public safety threat. He represented, frankly, a threat to not appear in court again. And I think the difficulty with that case is that while you look at the evidence for Darryl Brooks from the public safety assessment that was done for him prior to that bail being set, it was very clear to all the actors involved in the criminal legal system that he should never have had bail set at that amount. So, it's a cautionary tale. It was a mistake, right? I think D.A. Chisholm has acknowledged that. It's a cautionary tale for our system because what it shows is that we need to follow the evidence on bail decisions. We can't be driven simply by the seriousness of the offense or other factors that might bring emotion into it. What we need to do is look at the evidence, and the evidence in Darryl Brooks' case was clear. He should not have had that low amount of cash bail set. It should have been much higher. The difficulty is that, taking a case like that and then changing our constitution as a result of it is something we should really approach with caution, because the evidence was clear in the Brooks case. The problem was that it wasn't followed. Now, why wasn't it followed? It wasn't followed because of a resource deficit in our criminal legal system.
We'll be getting into that for sure.
Right.
Representative Allen, you've been a proponent for bail reform in for several years prior to this tragedy in your role on the Assembly Committee on Constitution and Ethics. What needs to change in Wisconsin's bail policies, in your opinion?
Sure. Well, we have to understand that the Brooks case was not an isolated incident. That there are other cases where soft-on-crime policies in the DA's office and soft-on-crime judges have allowed this kind of thing to happen in other circumstances. There was a carjacking, for instance, in Franklin, where the gentleman or the person's track record was such that there's no way that he should have been released, but he was also out on $1,000 bail. This pattern continues repeatedly. So that's where it's appropriate that we look at reforming bail in Wisconsin to make sure that we protect public safety first and foremost. If you think about it, that's the whole essence and purpose of government, is to protect each other from ourselves. You think of the lowest level of governance in the state of Wisconsin, I would call that the Homeowners Association. It's a group of people who come together and agree to terms, rules by which they can live together by, so that their actions don't hurt or harm others in the association. That's the essence of government. If we're left to ourselves and our own devices, my actions will have costs, and those costs may harm you. So we have to have laws and the systems in place designed to protect you from my actions.
So this particular case isn't the sole evidence but you're saying that bail policies need to change. I know one of the things that came through that committee that might go to Wisconsinites as early as April is a constitutional amendment. And that amendment does change the Constitution, how it treats bail policies. It says currently that monetary conditions of release or bail may be implemented only upon a finding that there is a reasonable basis to believe that the conditions are necessary to assure appearance in court. You were just talking about community safety. The proposed constitutional amendment would eliminate that requirement for violent crimes or update it. Instead, it would empower judges when setting a bail amount for violent crimes to consider the seriousness of the offense charge, the previous criminal record of the accused, probability that the accused will appear in court, and the need to protect members of the community from serious harm as defined by the legislature. To amend the Constitution, that resolution must pass the legislature in two consecutive sessions. That's why we say it could be on the ballot in April. Mr. Johnson, would that amendment have prevented the tragedy in Waukesha? Does it make communities safer?
I don't think it does. I think the problem is that what failed in the Waukesha case was inadequate resourcing in the criminal legal system. What I mean by that is D.A. Chisholm has talked about the fact that the prosecutor, the frontline prosecutor, whose job it was to review and make a bail request in the Brooks case, was in the middle of a jury trial and had a number of other items essentially on her menu that day. And so she wasn't able to access the public safety assessment. She wasn't able to devote the time and resources necessary to really take a good look at Mr. Brooks's record, which was replete with red flags. He had a warrant for him out of a different state. He had missed court in his cases in Wisconsin. His record was, again, had red flags in it that if she had had the time and the ability to really take a good hard look at it, I'm sure that her bail recommendation would have been much higher. But because the prosecutor's offices are understaffed, because the resources are not there, because pretrial detention agencies don't have the resources necessary to adequately supervise people who are out on bail, then the system can fail. So I don't think changing the words in the Constitution is really going to do the trick. What needs to happen is adequate resources for the criminal legal system. We can't buy an Edsel and expect it to function like a Cadillac. We need to fund a Cadillac.
So that constitutional language that puts more emphasis on community harm, that's either not necessary, or it doesn't actually do what it says?
Well, the statute right now actually does allow for taking into consideration public safety. It's hinged on the question of whether a person is likely to show up in court. So it does have that tie-in, and I think that's appropriate. Remember, these are folks that are presumed innocent, and the concern about having high cash bail in certain cases when you're dealing with low-risk defendants is that keeping people in jail can turn somebody from a low-risk person, right? Somebody who has no prior record, somebody who comes from a stable household that maybe, you know, has party to a crime, gets talked into doing something very stupid. Maybe they're young, 17, 18 years old. That low-risk person, if high cash bail is set on a case for them and they're exposed to high-risk individuals sitting in a county jail waiting for their time for trial, that low-risk person can end up being a much higher risk to the community when ultimately they're released. Well, so there are
Representative
costs.
Allen, you're a supporter of this amendment.
Well, we must understand that this amendment isn't about low-risk individuals. That's not the purpose of this amendment. So let's not confuse the issue here. What we're talking about is protecting the public from violent criminals or potentially violent criminals, putting public safety first. It's, in fact, using the components of the public safety risk assessment tool, which was used in Brooks's case but ignored. It's saying we're not going to allow soft-on-crime judges to hide behind a provision in our Constitution that says, oh, we can only set bail based upon the probability of return to court. We're giving the judges the tools that they need to adequately protect the public from potentially violent criminals. This is not about low-risk individuals. This is about violent criminals or potentially violent criminals. It's putting public safety first and foremost, which is our job in government.
So I respectfully disagree about the fact that it won't necessarily target low-risk individuals. If somebody is 17, 18 years old, and they get in with a crowd of kids that do something stupid, let's say they go burglarize a garage. Inside that garage, they decide to they find a shotgun or an old hunting rifle. They steal that. That's now an armed burglary. That's now a violent offense. And so that low-risk person is going to fall under the new provision of the Wisconsin Constitution in which, quote-unquote, people accused of violent offenses are going to be treated differently. And the likelihood of cash bail in that situation is going to be much higher. So the low-risk person absolutely can be caught up in a situation in which they're sitting in jail with high cash bail, even though public safety assessment really doesn't call for it, and their likelihood to appear in court is very strong.
You've both referenced the public safety assessment, so let's talk about that. Many people agree that that bail was set too low in the defendant's case in the Waukesha tragedy, and that public safety assessment was not reviewed in the way that it should have been. That the PSA is an evidence-based tool, uses 9 factors to provide a score to predict the risk of a defendant in committing a new crime or failing to appear. The factors include the age at current arrest, current violent offense, pending charge at the time of arrest, prior misdemeanor conviction, prior felony conviction, violent conviction, prior failure to appear in court, and a prior sentence to incarceration. All of these factors come up with this score. Mr. Johnson, is this tool working the way that it should? 9 counties currently use it, I believe. It's 10 counties.
In many cases it is. In most cases it is. Obviously, in the Brooks case, there was a failure, a systemic failure. The prosecutor didn't have access to it, so didn't get an opportunity to review it. That's a problem. They need to be able to, when they're making those charging decisions and those bail recommendations, they need to have all the evidence before them to make a smart and effective recommendation on bail. The court commissioner and the prosecutor actually in court on the day the bail was set should have also had access to it and potentially could have reviewed it with a more critical eye than they did, obviously. So the Brooks case was a failure, but the public safety risk assessment did show that he was high risk and that high cash bail would have been appropriate. So the public safety risk assessment does work. The evidence is there. We need to follow the evidence in making smart bail decisions.
Representative Allen, that public safety assessment looks at 9 different factors and then gives a person a score for their risk. The constitutional amendment focuses on certain factors, and I think you heard Mr. Johnson say that focusing on some of those factors instead of the totality of the risk that the evidence might show really could is not as an accurate picture. What do you say to that?
I'm all for putting tools and resources in the hands of judges to make good decisions. If this tool helps in that process, there's nothing wrong with doing that. I'm supportive of that effort. The point of the constitutional amendment is to say we want to empower judges to have that discretion to look at the evidence, to look at the resources, and make prudent decisions.
And they don't already have access to that?
They hide behind some of them. Some of them perhaps rightly claim that it's all about making sure the defendant reappears in court, and that's the only provision under which they can set bail. What we're suggesting is that if a person is a public safety risk and the judge deems that public safety risk as being very real, the judge should have the discretion to make that decision. That's why we elect judges. We want to give them the tools and resources and give them the power to make prudent decisions in the interest of public safety.
That public safety assessment does also have its critics, with some saying that the assessments contribute to significant racial disparities in the criminal justice system, which we have some problems with in Wisconsin. The Sentencing Project used data from the U.S. Census Bureau and the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics to assess different state rates of imprisoning white residents and people of color. Wisconsin has some of the most significant disparities when it comes to incarcerating black residents. One of every 36 black Wisconsinites is in prison, while black people comprise just 6% of Wisconsin's general population. Representative Allen, does that concern you? Do bail policies make some of these statistics worse?
Sure. Well, I think in terms of evaluating the public safety assessment tool, we should look at it from a purely empirical standpoint. And I think the jury is still out on its effectiveness. For instance, in New Jersey, from 2014 to 2017, they actually saw an increase in the number of new crimes committed while on pretrial release. In New York, same thing, a 3% increase in the rate of new violent felony arrests during post period of implementation of people released on the program. So empirically, we have to evaluate the program and decide whether it's prudent to use it. And absolutely, I'm concerned about racial disparities in Wisconsin. In particular, I'm concerned about the racial disparities in the victims. In 2021, the most recent year that we have data for, you mentioned African Americans make up 6.8% of the state of Wisconsin population, and yet, of the victims of homicide, 67%. Of aggravated assault, 50%. 50% of the victims of aggravated assault are African Americans.
So you're saying the bail reform really is focused on the impact on the victim?
Absolutely.
So, Mr. Johnson, what do you think when you look at those disparities in the criminal justice system? Do you think that this constitutional amendment will make those disparities worse?
Well, potentially they will. The difficulty with setting high cash bail, particularly for low-risk individuals, is that you take somebody who, again, does not likely represent a public safety threat, and they do not likely represent a threat to not appear in court. And yet you lock them up, they potentially lose their job, they potentially lose their house, their home, their apartment, they could lose custody of their children. You take somebody who is stable and you destabilize them. That is not good for the community. It's not good for that defendant, but it's also not good for the community. It takes a low-risk person and it potentially makes them more risky.
But nobody's suggesting high bail for low-risk persons.
Well, right, but the problem is when you tie it to the types of offense they're accused of. Low-risk people can be accused of serious offenses, right? Look at Kyle Rittenhouse. He was probably low-risk, right? And yet he could have sat in jail for up to 2 years had he not been able to crowdfund $2 million in bail. I would imagine that many, many conservatives would say Kyle Rittenhouse never belonged in jail, and he was ultimately exonerated. And yet, what would have become of his life if he had had to sit in jail waiting for his trial for 2 years? you know, we don't know, thankfully, because I guess from his perspective, certainly, thankfully, because he was able to crowdfund $2 million. A kid from Milwaukee, from a low-income family, that's never going to happen, right?
We elect judges to make these decisions on our behalf in our judicial system. That's the purpose. That's why we elect judges. We want judges who have prudent judgment, who have good judgment. We should evaluate those candidates properly. If, in fact, we find that a judge is over and over again assessing high bail for low probability, low violent crimes, we should get rid of that judge. On the other hand, if we have a judge that's historically setting low bail for high violent crimes or potentially violent people, we should get rid of that judge. That's the purpose of our judicial system and why we elect judges.
Right. I certainly understand that. But again, I think in the reality, in the real world, you're going to have low-risk folks that are caught up and accused of...
That's speculative.
Believe me, it's not speculative. I've been doing this for 27 years. It happens. It happens every single day in courtrooms across the state. Believe me.
Some research has been done. You were talking about the impact of pretrial incarceration on people. The Stanford Law Review looked at this in 2017. They determined that detained defendants are 25% more likely than other defendants who've been released to plead guilty, 43% more likely to be sentenced to jail and receive sentences that are more than twice as long on average just by virtue of being detained pre-trial, you know, before their determination of guilt or innocence. Representative Allen, so should public safety always take precedence over before a defendant has their right to a trial?
We have a pre-trial detention process for a reason. I would argue that that reason is not exclusively to ensure that they will reappear in court. I would argue that we have an ethical and moral responsibility to think about, pay attention to, and try to discern the potential risk to harm in our community and set pretrial detention methods, periods, based upon that risk. I think it is a moral and ethical responsibility. It's the purpose, the central crux of government, is to think about our safety. When we have homicides that are committed every week in the state of Wisconsin, when we have victims who are subject to, when people go to a parade and they're expecting to celebrate a season and they walk away without their loved ones, or they walk away traumatized, never wanting to go to a parade again, we're not doing our job. Our job as government is to make sure that people's safety are protected. They should be able to go to a parade with all confidence that they will be safe and we won't have some person committing random acts of murder in broad daylight. It's just wrong.
We started out the show talking about how some states are doing away with cash bail because of concerns about the impact on people in poverty. You talked a little bit about people in poverty and their experience with pretrial detention and those risks. And you also mentioned New Jersey and some of the results with their changes in bail policy. They are using a risk-based system. They say they have not seen an increase in criminal activity by low-risk offenders and that low-risk offenders have higher court appearance rates overall. A greater number of serious offenders are kept in jail. Mr. Johnson, the Wisconsin State Bar, in their position says cash bail is increasingly recognized as unfair and counterproductive to public safety. Would you support doing away with cash bail? Is that part of the answer here?
Well, I think the key is following the evidence and making good bail decisions based on the evidence. If somebody can be safely released in the community based on the fact that they're low risk, even if possibly they're charged with a very serious offense, if they're likely to show up and they're low risk in terms of public safety threat to the community, they should be released with little or no cash bail. There was a study by the Arnold Foundation in Kentucky from 2009 to 2010 that found that low risk individuals that were incarcerated even for as little as 2 to 3 days were 40% more likely to commit another crime than those who were released within 24 hours. So the key here is making good bail decisions based on the evidence. The public safety assessment is a good way to assess that evidence. It's a tool. It's like any other tool. It should be used, but it can't be used blindly. People, you know, court commissioners and judges can always override that public safety assessment if they disagree with its conclusions. But that's the key, following the evidence, because that's what makes good bail decisions.
Cash bail important for Wisconsin with new bail policies, I'm assuming?
I think the jury's still out on the effectiveness of these assessment tools and having a non-cash bail system. I think I'd rather see other states experiment with it longer, and we can evaluate the data over time and make those decisions at some point in the future. For now, we have a system of bail, and I think that the bail amounts ought to be set based upon public safety risk. So for me, it's a kind of a wait-and-see approach, and let's look at the empirical data and study it over time.
Mr. Johnson, you referenced early in the interview the court backlog as a contributing factor to kind of the pressure on courts to make good bail decisions. This has been identified across the state's court systems throughout Wisconsin, dealing with a significant backlog, mostly caused by the pandemic. We're looking at some data from the Wisconsin court system. The number of pending felony cases was up nearly 43,000 at the end of 2021, a 48% increase from 2019, which ended with just 28,000 cases pending. The median age or length of wait time for felony cases to be taken up has also increased significantly from 70 days in 2019 to more than 7 months for a case to be taken up. Mr. Johnson, when you look at those numbers, what do you think needs to change?
Well, clearly, again, it's a question of resources, right? I mean, we need to have the courts adequately funded. We need to have the prosecutor's offices adequately funded. We need to have the public defender's offices adequately funded. A big part of the shortage right now around the state is that they cannot find enough lawyers to be appointed for indigent defendants, right? And so cases get delayed. In Milwaukee County, that's a serious problem. We need to adequately fund it, the private bar lawyers who are taking public defender cases and the public defender's office, so that they can hire staff and retain staff so that people can get counsel and those cases can move forward. Clearly, the pandemic was a huge problem for the court system. It backed things up. Cases couldn't get tried. Jury trials couldn't happen, certainly during 2020 especially. And it's been a slow process of recovery. But again, it's a resource question. And the state legislature needs to adequately fund DA's offices, public defender's offices, the criminal legal system generally, including those organizations that supervise people on pretrial release to make sure that public safety needs are met.
Representative Allen, does the legislature need to look more closely at remedies to the court backlog?
Well, I always like to take the moment when we have a chance to say I agree, So I agree, Mr. Johnson. I think that the state does have a responsibility to provide adequate funding for our judicial system, and we can't stick our heads in the sand and assume that the problems are just going to take care of themselves. That being said, in the last budget, we did increase. Some would argue we could have increased more. I think in the next budget, I think we will increase more. In terms of that case backlog, we kind of took a county-by-county analysis, and it's frankly a mixed bag. We've actually had a handful of counties in the state of Wisconsin reduce their backlog from 2019 to 2021. So some counties are managing through the process. Most counties do have an increase in backlog. Some increases are greater than the statewide average. I think it's each county's individual response to COVID rather than COVID itself. I think it would be worthwhile for those counties to review their policies or the choices that they made and make corrective measures in the future. Letting the fear of COVID get in the way of the prosecution of justice, I think, was fundamentally wrong. We have a legal constitutional responsibility for the quick prosecution of cases, and we didn't do that. We failed in that constitutional responsibility through the COVID pandemic. So we need to correct that. We need to get course correct, get back on track, and make sure that we implement systems such that that never happens again.
So you'll be a supporter and an advocate for more resources
Yes.
for the criminal justice system. What else do you think the legislature could do? More resources, as you mentioned, but are there things that should change in regard to bail or other criminal justice policies?
Well, certainly I'd like to see things like the public safety assessment adopted more widely around
codified?
The state.
Codified?
I don't know if it needs to be codified, but certainly it's appropriate for different counties to use risk assessment tools that are available to make smart bail decisions and to make sure that they follow the evidence in making those smart bail decisions. Again, you know, the resource question is huge. Generally, if somebody's held on bail on a felony case, they can demand a speedy trial, and the idea is that they should get a trial within 90 days, or that they would be released. That's difficult in some of the more backlog court systems around the state. So I think adequate resources is a huge question. That's certainly the first step that the legislature can take. Adequately funding prosecutors, adequately funding the public defender's office, adequately funding the private bar lawyers who take those public defender cases, because that's a part of the system as well. All those resource questions really need to be closely looked at by the legislature.
Well, I think we're going to end on that area of agreement, more resources, and hopefully we have some collaboration going forward. So thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers
Thanks.
Of Newsmakers yeah. for tuning in today. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.